When you look up at the sky and see clouds, do you think cirrus, cumulus, stratus, or streaky, puffy, layered? In other words, are you more of the scientific or poetic bent? These days, those viewpoints present a dichotomy, but that wasn't always the case. Throughout most of history, the scientific and poetic were not considered opposites. Instead, they enhanced each other. So when a dreamy young Englishman named Luke Howard looked up at the clouds in the late 18th century, he was both moved by their beauty and eager to explain them. No one before him had been able to explain the how and why of clouds. No one had even come up with proper names for them. When the young meteorologist delivered a lecture in 1802 called On the Modifications of Clouds, he changed history. The story of Luke Howard is told in a new book by Richard Hamblin called The Invention of Clouds. Richard Hamblin joins us from our bureau in London. Hello, Mr. Hamblin.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
Do you have the book with you? Please,
I do.
Please, yes. Say yes. I just wondered if you would read Shelley's short poem, which is so beautiful, but you can see... You can see the clouds in this poem.
I bring fresh showers for the thirsting flowers from the seas and the streams. I bear light shade for the leaves when laid in their noonday dreams. From my wings are shaken the dews that waken the sweet birds, every one, when rocked to rest on their mother's breast as she dances about the sun. I wield the flail of the lashing hail and whiten the green plains under. And then again, I dissolve it in rain and laugh as I pass in thunder.
This poem is called The Cloud by Shelley. Is it fair to say that this poem was inspired by Luke Howard's work?
Certainly there's a consensus of opinion on that. If you look at his descriptions of clouds and the way that he arranges his short couplets on each cloud, it seems to be an analysis in verse form of Luke Howard's seven cloud types.
Let's get a little bit about the character of Luke Howard himself. He was a Quaker from a Quaker family. He was very dreamy. I guess I used that word already. He was a modest guy.
Yes, that's right. I mean, it's one of the appealing things about him, definitely. It's also, as a biographer, though, one of the frustrating things about him, because he was such a nice guy, you know, and in the back of your mind you think, people don't really want to read a book about a nice guy. He didn't have affairs. He didn't cheat his friends. He hadn't harbored no political ambitions. He just got on quietly with what interested him, which was looking up at the sky. I mean, the terms cirrus, cumulus, nimbus are used every day, the world over, by millions of people. And I think to have given the world a language that the world feels so comfortable with, so happy with, is a wonderful thing to have done.
Well, what did people think clouds were? I mean, surely throughout history, somebody had tried to name the clouds or describe what they were made of or what their purpose was.
Yeah, of course. There were quite a few attempts to give names to the clouds, none of which had been successful. I mean, most people by Luke Howard's time were aware that they were made up of water vapor. But what actually shaped them, how they actually came to be up there, apparently floating, really wasn't known, really until quite late in Luke Howard's own life.
When people were trying to study themselves the clouds, when they looked up at the sky, did they want some kind of scientific explanation for what was going on?
That's a good question. I mean, it really wasn't a big deal that we didn't have proper names for the clouds. I mean, we understood that if there was a large, black, fearsome-looking cloud in the sky, then it was about to rain. And that's kind of good enough for most people, I think.
Then why was his lecture in 1802? Why did it cause such a stir? Why were people so thrilled by it?
In a way that Howard didn't solve a problem, because there wasn't a problem. But they were already besotted with the idea of naming things. I mean, in the last 50 years, you know, microbes, bacteria, everything from those up to the great mammals and had all been named. And this idea that this guy can just look up and actually name the clouds like some kind of Adam was, I think, just held to be extraordinary.
Richard, Luke Howard learned a lot on his own by what, reading? By reading scientific books because he was interested in them, or how?
And he was a member of a number of science clubs, but he had no formal training. There were lots of these amateur science clubs just for enthusiasts like Luke Howard, young, uneducated, but they had an interest in science, which was really coming into its own at that time. And it was his really his membership of the Askasian Society in the City of London. That really was his university, in a way. His kind of science degree, if you like, was taken simply by membership of this fortnightly science club. And it was for that club that he wrote his essay on cloud.
One of the sort of obstacles that Luke Howard came across when he started naming the clouds was this opposition in some quarters to the use of Latin. He chose the words cirrus, cumulus, stratus, nimbus. And other people were saying, hey, can't you just stick to English?
Yes.
We don't speak Latin, we speak English. So he had to fight this. What was his logic for using the Latin?
Well, primarily it was that Latin was already the international language of scientific nomenclature, but also the fact that the clouds are international. And one of the problems that was already there in discussing the state of the sky was the problem of local language. If, for example, I look up and see cirrocumulus and I say mackerel sky, then...
Mackerel sky?
Yeah, it looks
that
like
must
the
be
scales,
a British,
the
isn't
scale,
it?
That's a British term, scales of a fish. Whereas a Spanish would say cielo empedrado, which means cobbled road. Or a French would say ciel pommelé, dappled road. So already you have this problem of the translatability of terms.
Well, we are in the position of having to translate them for people who are not quite sure. So we're going to have to use the imprecise English language, and I think we can safely do it. Let's start with cirrus. Can I say that it's the cirrus clouds are streaky or wispy?
You can. I mean, cirrus was already a Latin word meaning fiber or hair.
And cumulus are the big, fat, beautiful, puffy ones, right?
That's right.
And stratus?
That's from the Latin word for heap. Like accumulation.
And stratus is easy because we have the word stratify.
Stratify, from the same root.
So layer.
Stratum, layer.
And correct. Nimbus is a kind of combination.
Yes, and nimbus comes from the Latin word for cloud, because Howard regarded the nimbus cloud as the combination of all three types, you know, sort of daddy cloud of them all.
One of the things that's so poetic about this story, and I think that is the hardest to grasp, was this notion that people could have their science and their poetry all melded into one glorious new invention.
That's right. I mean, really, for him, he would have been staggered to think that, say, Goethe's poems about the clouds were considered simply to be literary, whereas his essay on clouds was considered simply to be scientific, and never twain shall meet. I mean, for him, simply trying to understand the world is the thing, and that's what poets, painters, meteorologists, geologists, radio presenters are all trying to do, trying to make sense of the world.
Luke Howard lived to a ripe old age. He was 91 years old when he died, very peaceful death, and his son, one of his sons, was reading to him from the book of Genesis a passage about clouds.
I know. It's one of those things that you're not quite sure whether it's just family folklore or whether it's historic fact, but I like it. I think it's a good image.
Richard Hamblin is the author of The Invention of Clouds, How an Amateur Meteorologist Forged the Language of the Skies. He joined us from our bureau in London. Thank you, Mr. Hamblin.
Thank you, Lisa.